The Lebs, Michael Muhammad's first full-length fiction, picks up some years after his debut novella about a family of Lebanese Muslims, The Tribe, ended. Barney, the protagonist of both, is now a senior at Punchbowl Boys High, a school that once had a reputation for violence and anarchy. Andrew Popel has more.
Well, firstly, let's set up the context. So the book is set in the late 90s, and it's set in a real place, Punchbowl Boys High School, which is the high school that I went to. And the majority of the students at that school are from Arab-Australian Muslim backgrounds, which I, in the book, call Lebs for shorthand, which is a term that we were throwing around interchangeably with things like Middle Eastern, Arab and Muslim. Now, it just so happens that for any young Leb growing up in the western suburbs of Sydney between the years 1998 and 2005, you're going to be a little bit unlucky because that's when the SCAF gang rapes took place in the year 2000, which turned pretty much every Arab-Australian Muslim male into a sexual predator in Australia. And then you had in 2001 the September 11 attacks on New York City, which in addition to the sexual predator stereotype, turned us all into terrorist suspects. And then by 2005, with the explosion of the Cronulla riots, the Arab-Australian Muslim male, the Leb, had basically become a folk devil. He was a drug dealer, gangster, drive-by shooter. Then he was a sexual predator. Then he was a terrorist suspect and so on. And so that's the world that Banny Adam, the protagonist of this book, is living in as a teenage boy. Now, one of the problems with the way Arab-Australian Muslim men are usually represented and constructed in the mainstream media and in the political language, in political rhetoric, is extremely simplistic. It's very one-dimensional. We only play the part of the terrorist or the sexual predator or the gangster if you look at the historical representations of us, not just in Australia, but around the world. And so what I wanted to do in the Lebs is not give an alternative point of view, which is necessarily positive. I wanted to give a complex point of view, which gives both the strengths and weaknesses in our community and what it meant to be a Leb. And so now to get to your point on the question of contradiction, Banny has contradictory thoughts all the time because he is a complex individual. Sometimes he can think in extremely homophobic, misogynist, violent ways, and other times he can think in extremely liberal, secular, progressive ways. Sometimes he's quoting great poetry, but in other times he's using it to justify utterly absurd ideas like pedophilia between him and his older teacher. So it's a complex portrayal of what it means to be a Leb. And I like to make the point that his name Banny Adam in Arabic means child of Adam or humankind. And so I was very explicit in giving him that name because I wanted him to represent humanity. And what it means to be a human being is a contradictory experience.
Banny's experience is very much circumscribed by the context you've just talked about. And there's a scene the day after September 11, 2001, when Banny's school is called to assembly. It's actually his year group are called to assembly. And the principal offers a particularly closed-minded opportunity for the students to discuss the events. Emerging from the discussion, we hear perspectives about America's complicity in the violence that it receives and where is the sympathy, where is the empathy for people that die every day in conflict. This isn't a discussion that we hear broadly, if at all. How did you begin this for your writing and where do we go with this discussion?
So look, you know, that would be one of the most complex and difficult scenes to comprehend in the Lebs. And it happens very early on because the book starts around 1998. By about 30 pages in, you're in 2001, and it's the day of September 11. Now, for me growing up in the western suburbs of Sydney, among a large Muslim community, the first narrative that I wanted to put forward, which is a shocking narrative to a lot of Australians, but, you know, we just have to get past the denial about the situation and actually speak openly about it. For young Muslim men that I grew up around, it was a day of celebration. And so I wanted to write about that openly and explicitly. I didn't want to sugarcoat how the Lebs, the boys that I grew up around, were feeling the morning of 9/11 when they woke up. They turned on their televisions and they saw those planes flying into the buildings. And so when they went to school, they did not in any way hide their emotions. They were going out of their way, in fact, to show the teachers, who were primarily white, that they were jubilant about the event, about the incident, about those crimes. And so this is how it flips, because I wanted to give both points of view. So on the one hand, there's this narrative about Arab-Muslim jubilation in the face of this tremendous act of terrorism. And then on the other hand, what happens is the school principal, and this happened in my reality, this actually happened at Punch Bowl Boys, and I write about it as a fictional account of what actually happened. The principal had put the flag half-mast. And then he called my year group in particular up to the library to talk it through with us, because he felt that our group was the main group who were expressing a particular kind of sentiment which was distasteful, and he felt that he needed to talk it through. Now, this young boy in the book and in reality put up his hand, waited for a good hour to be allowed to speak, and finally he said that he felt there was a hypocrisy in the way in which the school expected us, who were primarily, the student body, who were primarily Arab Australian Muslim, to mourn this event, but never once in the history of us being at that school did the school show any sympathy for the thousands and in some cases millions of people who are related to us and connected to us through our ancestry that had been slaughtered in this conflict of East and West. And so I wanted to give both points of view. I wanted to give the point of view in the book of the horrendous jubilation that those boys were expressing, but also some kind of context for why they were articulating the particular sentiment that they were expressing. And, you know, I think that this is the hardest point and part for many Australians to comprehend, that the events of 9/11 are not a one-sided account. They're not unjustified acts of hate and terror as the Bush administration was pushing. It had a lot to do with a long history of imperialism, colonialism, illegal occupation and invasion of Middle Eastern and Muslim countries. And I want to give a balanced point of view of both in the book.
We've just been talking about Bani. He's a keen observer of everyone that he comes past, the men that he observes in his life, both within his group and others. And I want to ask, is the phrase toxic masculinity, which we hear a lot now, I know I wasn't hearing that phrase in the late 90s, early 2000s. Is it fair here? Because so many interactions in the Lebs are predicated by this perceived power imbalance between men and the women involved. And yet I thought the final scene actually turned that quite a bit on its head in the way that Bani plays that out and comes to a realization.
Look, in the context of the Me Too movement, in the context of all the language that and rhetoric and politics that we're seeing at the moment, I think terms like toxic masculinity are very topical and are coming up a lot. There's all this kind of rhetoric that's being used to articulate the struggle. Look, the problem for me, as a person who identifies as brown, as Arab, as an Arab Muslim Australian man, is that quite often I can't escape particular constructions of masculinity. It's one of the historical issues with the way we construct the brown and black other, because there's a particular type of body. It's hairy, it's big, it's dark, it's seen as strong. When we think about the racist stereotyping of coloured men's genitalia, again, it's seen as hypersexual, hypermasculine. And so there is, for me, a danger in mixing up the language of masculinity with the language of patriarchy. Because for many, many men, particularly coloured men and working class men, they can never actually escape the masculinity that's built into their bodies. And there shouldn't be any shame in that. We should be able, men and women and everyone else, to embrace that which is masculine and see it in a beautiful way, separate from patriarchy. So I actually don't use terms like hypermasculinity and toxic masculinity. I use the term patriarchy. And if we're going to talk about patriarchy in the book, there's heaps of it. It's gross. The misogyny, the sexism, the patriarchal behavior of those young men that I grew up around is horrendous. But there is, I think, also moments of beautiful masculinity. And I try to give a kind of complex portrayal of both.
Can I say, I hope for a predominantly white readership of the Lebs, to read a book like this would have been so important for me at high school, to see not just representation outside my own culture from 100, 200, 1,000 years ago or in another country, but to see it within my own city. I would hope that readership.
I absolutely agree and appreciate what you're saying. I think that one of the biggest problems historically is not just that people of colour are constantly being pressured to read primarily white literature in school and university. And that's not a controversial thing to say. That's actually just standard curriculum if we look at what kids generally have to study. But also, I think it's a way of reinforcing a narrow-minded way of looking at the world for people who would be identified as white, because it means that they don't get to experience just how beautifully diverse this country is and this world is. And it reinforces what important anthropologist from the University of Melbourne named Gus and Haj calls a fantasy of white supremacy. If all you're consuming as a white person or a person of color is white literature, then it reinforces the illusion that whiteness is the superior position to be in throughout the world. And we've seen the devastating consequences of that throughout the world. I'm aware, you know, as a creative writer, I'm aware of some of the implications of the work that I've produced and some of the challenges and confrontation that people will face when they have to engage in this. But what I would like to point out is that this is a mirror. This book is a mirror of my reality. It's the mirror of a lot of people's realities, particularly young people of color growing up in the western suburbs of Sydney. And that's something that I can't apologize for, something I'm very proud to say is now part of Australian literature.
Michael Muhammad Ahmed, Ending That Story by Andrew Popel. You can hear the chat with Andrew and Michael in its entirety over on 2SER's very own Final Draft. It's on Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. or you can go to our website 2SER.com and find the show there.